IVM.
Welcome to the Equity Sahiye podcast with Motilal Oswal Asset Management Company. This podcast will delve into the investment insights and philosophies of Motilal Oswal Asset Management Company and speak about the frameworks used by them to assess various sectors for investment. Folks, welcome to the show. My guest today is Shreya Lunkar, Senior VP and Fund Manager PMS at Motilal Oswal Asset Management Company. And the topic for today's episode is India's infrastructure and capital goods sector. Shreya, welcome to this episode. We're going to be talking about what I feel is one of the most important sectors in India, probably even the world, which is infrastructure and capital goods, or as we in the market know it as infra and cap goods, right? Every time any of us goes abroad, whether they even going to a Singapore or a Dubai or a London or a New York, the one thing that strikes us about these developed markets, these advanced economies, is the quality of infra, whether it's public transport from metros to how smooth the roads are. You know, there it looks like they have a lot of infra and probably the usage isn't much. And here in India, it seems like we don't have any infra and we've got such a big dearth of infra. And then, of course, there is a fact that infra and cap goods is literally the single most important sector for the economy. So I want to start with that. Okay, 2 points. First is, why is it even important from Motilal Oswal's perspective? How do you see it? How do you actually, you know, size up the sector and its impact on the country? And second is, we'll just touch upon what's really the constituents of infra and cap goods. Let's start with that.
So clearly the sector is very, very big and very diverse in its very nature, because the linkage of it goes to the very grassroots level of every economy. And this is not true for our phase of economy or our phase of development. Even if you hail back to history, even in the Roman dynasty, whenever the economy used to suffer, all the emperors would do is announce about of development of temples or about infrastructure development, yeah, so to say. So this has been the go-to strategy to revive any economy. If you look back into the deep history or you look at the global history, China being a case in point. But the real relevance of it comes to the fore, because this is a sector which has a very big perimeter or multiplier effect on other economies. Because what happens is, when you build up an infrastructure, you generate a lot of employment for the skilled and more so for the unskilled labor. Mm. And the moment you generate such an employment, the income multiplier that results into higher consumption by these people. And the moment your higher consumption comes into the reason because of higher per capita incomes, what happens is, as a result, most of these manufacturing consumptions are manufactured in India. So what happens is, an infra spend actually starts invigorating the manufacturing part of the economy. And, you know, although this new government had coined Make in India about 5 years ago, but the real impetus of it will be felt only once the per capita income rises, we start consuming more and better, and then we start manufacturing what we are consuming more and better.
Yes.
So the impact of it is just so far and wide that it actually creates a very big multiplier, and it is how any economy starts. So this is like, think about it as jump starting a car. If your car is down with your battery, you will need somebody to push the car, and then your car starts automatically and then it starts running on its own. Infrastructure spend is something like that. The second point that you highlighted about global infrastructure versus Indian infrastructure, that is true. Global infrastructure, there is a lot of it, but underutilized.
Mm.
In India, we are underserved. We need a lot more infrastructure, but that is a good part. In globally, countries are struggling to make economic sense of all the infrastructure that they've built over the last century. In India, there is a need to build infrastructure, build assets over the next 10 to 15 years, given the population that we have.
Yeah.
So what it does is, essentially, it leaves a lot of headroom. All you need is political willingness. All you need is private sector willingness. All you need is a lender willingness, funding availability, as we call it. I think once these three vectors come in place, given the need that is there and given how the state in which the world is in, there is a reason to believe that this is a very strong sector, and this will be one of the most important pivot on which India's growth will lie for the next 20 years.
Sure. And since we're talking about the importance of the sector is also massive, right? I mean, you're not talking about, like we've spoken in the past about banking or insurance or automobile. Here we're talking about infra and cap goods. It's actually an umbrella term for a lot of sectors. Okay. So for the purposes of this podcast, for this episode, for this recording, can you just tell our listeners which sector specifically we'll be referring to when we talk about generally the infra and cap goods sector?
So as you know that, infrastructure and capital goods sector is a very broad name. But broadly, if you were to just call out 4-5 names which you can relate to, the first and foremost is the power sector. Because for any industrialization, you need power to be available. So power sector becomes a very strong. So typically it contributes about 30-35% of the overall spend. The second comes transportation. Given how populous our country is, which is 130 crore people, you need that much more to travel better. Now this includes roads, railways, airports, metros, ports, everything.
Yeah.
The third you can think about is the private sector CAPEX, which comes largely from steel and cement. Because they are again the building vectors. When you talk about infrastructure, the usage of steel and cement cannot be ignored. And the last comes is the irrigation and the oil and gas piece. Now, irrigation is important for India, specifically very unique feature about India's capex versus global capex is in irrigation, because we are a very agrarian economy. And to delink our reliance on monsoons, which itself is a god of act,
an act of god.
Then automatically you need irrigation to make yourself insulated.
Yeah.
And also then comes your oil and gas. Because we consume a lot of crude ourselves, there is a lot of reasons, and also because of the pollution sensitivity that the global governments are going through, there is a lot of requirement of capex to be done by these oil and gas to make sure that they are cleaner refineries and they produce more cleaner fuels.
Yeah, we're just talking about the auto sector and how that's going to have, the engines there are going to be more expensive because of changing fuel norms. And just like we followed in the previous recordings in the Equity Sahiya podcast with Motilal Oswal Asset Management Company, this episode will also be split into four parts. The first part will be the evolution of the infra and cap goods sector. The second part is where we are today. The third part is going to talk about the future. The fourth part, call to action. How do you choose a good infra and cap goods company to invest in using the Motilal Oswal Asset Management Company's framework? Shrey, let's start with the evolution of the infra and cap goods sector. I know it's like, it probably goes back to post-independence and how we shaped out there. I know that we used to have five-year plans when the Planning Commission used to be there. We can probably use that as one kind of a bucket, right? The last 5 years in three buckets. Let's start from there.
So if you look at the last 15 years and split it into buckets of 5 years, which is five planning periods, the first period, which started in 02 to 07, which is where we saw the biggest bull run in India, that was steered because of this capex part, where the capex was set at 5% of the GDP or about 10 lakh crores that was planned to spend from a period of 02 to 07. And this was way higher than our standards looking into the past point of time.
Yeah.
And what we saw during this phase specifically is the government going out of its way to promote private sector capex to come in. Because so far it was always a central government who used to do investment in this infrastructure, as you know, because these infrastructure projects are very long term.
Yeah.
They are very long gestation and you need a very effective cost of funding to make it viable.
Yeah.
So that is the reason why central government used to do it. But at that point of time, private sectors became big enough and actually private sector investments moved from 10% to almost 25% in this phase, and which is very commendable because at some point this is required.
Sure.
Then follows the next phase.
Yes.
The next phase was from a pay phase of from 07 to 012.
Yes.
The next 5 years, obviously, we went higher in our capex journey. We went from 5% to 7% of GDP.
Hmm.
And we landed up spending almost 25 lakh crores in the next 5 years. So you can imagine the second 5 year block, we spent 2.5 times of the first 5 year block.
Wow.
But the texture of this spend was a lot different from the first. In the first one, it was a lot more power driven.
Hmm.
In the second 5 year block, it was a lot more transportation driven. The Delhi Metro came about and a lot of other roads and telecom capex was also part of it. Then followed with the third 5 year block, which is 12 to 17, which was pegged at about 8% of GDP or about 55 to 60 lakh crores was to be spent.
Hmm.
However, we underachieved it, although the official estimates are yet to be out. But our estimate is that we would have underachieved it just because we went through a very prolonged slowdown with the whole NPL cycle in the banking system that came about.
Hmm.
That would have actually slowed down or, under encouraged entrepreneurs to invest in the infrastructure space.
Sure.
And that is the reason that slowdown has happened.
So I'm just going to just rewind those numbers for the listeners, right? Because in the first bucket, 2002 to 2007, we had 5% of GDP or about 9 lakh crores. Second bucket, we were at 7% of GDP in 25 lakh crores, what Shrey just said, 2.5 times, because that's also when you had a lot of the power telecom roads and Delhi Metro. Just a small note out there, what Shrey meant was the extension of the Delhi Metro. Delhi Metro first, of course, was conceived, I don't know, maybe in 2000 or so, or somewhere. And third is when we went to 8% of GDP, that's almost $1 trillion or about 55 lakh crores. Shrey, put this in perspective for us. What is, you know, percentage of GDP is fine, 9, 10, 20 lakh crores is fine. How does this measure with our great neighbor, you know, who's known for infra?
So, you know, China took a while to go to 10% of GDP, but it went to 10% of GDP. And when it went to 10% of GDP, it stayed at 10% of GDP for almost 10 to 12 years after that. Wow. So that is the need that we are at. We are still in the journey of going from 5% of GDP to 10% of GDP. Hopefully, in this current 5-year period that we are in, given the decisive mandate the government has got, I believe that there is a good chance that the government will spend almost $1.5 trillion over the next 5 years. Which means we will end up spending around 10 to 12% of the GDP as investment in CapEx and infrastructure sector. And then imagine what if we sustain there for the next 10 years.
Yeah, wow.
We will see an evolution much stronger than China if we can manage to achieve it. But even if we don't achieve it over the next 10 years, the fact is the next 5 years or the next 10 years are absolutely going to be quite strong from an infrastructure standpoint, because we will actually go beyond that, beyond the threshold of 10% as a GDP.
Yeah. So, folks, if you're staying in Mumbai, then you would have seen the metro lines, the metro construction that's there pretty much everywhere. I mean, there's no way that you can avoid it if you're commuting from, you know, if you're doing a Bandra to Lower Parel commute, or if you're even doing a South Bombay to North Bombay commute, the metro is everywhere. That's the infra we're talking about. So, Shrey, let's get into where we are today, okay? We know that the past few years haven't been that great for infra. We know that we're probably at a cyclical bottom or somewhere we are recovering. So let's try and get some color, some texture on this, on the situation, on where we are today.
So clearly the last 10 years have been extremely gruesome, because the economy has slowed down. At the same time, it followed with a massive spending on infrastructure, as we talked about, right? And that led to a longer consolidation phase, because those assets never came up on time, and the interest meter, which was very high, kept on running. So that kept making these long-term assets more and more unviable with every passing year of non-completion. So as a result, what happened is, and unfortunately, it also coincided with policy paralysis. We went through a lot of government changes. We went through a lot of high inflation, which led to high interest rates. And NPL cycle that we see today is as a result of that. So just to give you an idea, NPL cycle is now so dire, in such a dire state, that almost 25 to 30% of all the corporate loans given by the banking sector are today stressed in one way or the other.
Yeah.
And that is a very huge number. And that clearly points to the fact that today we are at a cyclical bottom. The another way of looking at cyclical bottom is looking at this. There is a very, there's an economic measure of asset creation, which is gross capital fixed formation.
Gross fixed capital formation.
Gross fixed capital formation, which is called GFCF.
Yeah.
When you see, when you measure GFCF as a measure of GDP, you know, it ranges from 0.4 to 2.4x.
Wow, that's a big
range.
That
means, yes, just for the benefit of the listeners, what means is if our economy is growing at a nominal rate of about 12 to 13%, and when I say it's 0.5, that means our infrastructure spend is growing at 5 to 6%.
Wow.
Likewise, in a good cycle, when our GDP is growing at 12% to 13%, and when I say it's 2x, that means our infrastructure spend can go to 25 to 30%.
Huh.
So the point is that your infrastructure spend actually ranges from 5% to 25%.
Huge,
and that is the
age.
Level of band or volatility. And that is why we call this sector very cyclical. Because in the cyclical, your peak and the troughs are very wide.
Extremes.
And that is what, if you measure, the long-term average is 1.1.
Right.
But this 1.1 is very, very, has a very wide band. It oscillates from 0.5 to 2.5. So today where we are at about 1.1, 1.2 times the multiplier. And this is despite such a bad NPL cycle that we are in. And right now, as you know, because of the reforms that has been undertaken, we are coming out of the NPL cycle pretty well. And over the next 2 years, we will not even talk about NPLs, hopefully. The moment you come into that phase, you get into the investment phase again.
Sure.
You get into a positive mindset phase where entrepreneurs are willing to take bets again, put risk in the front again, and take risk to make more money and create assets. as I mentioned, that there is a good chance over the next 10 years, there will be a phase of couple of years where we will see infrastructure spend go up by as much as 20 to 25%. Although the long-term range of capital infrastructure spend can be at 15%,
sure.
But there will be a phase, episodic phase over the next 2 to 3 years, over the next 5 years or 7 years, that you will see infrastructure spend actually overshooting that number and going as much as high as 20 to 25%.
Wow.
And when that happens, the J-curve will be staring at us, and you know, it will have that multiplier effect as we spoke about, and the whole economy will see a growth spurt.
So let's get into the future part of it. Before that, I just want to spend maybe a minute on interest rates, right? Because this is a critical part of infra and cap goods. This is not like a private entrepreneur who is building a new plant for himself. He probably works on 5-year cycle, then he decides that he needs new capacity. He probably funds it internally, you know, and then completes the project in 1 year or 2 years, and then the project starts giving him back the money in maybe 3 or 4 or 5 years. Infra and cap goods is fundamentally different. First of all, you need to have the muscles of a very large balance sheet, which is why the government has a primary role in all this. And the second is the cost of money, okay? So first, you know, if you can just explain why interest rates are so important to infra and cap goods, then we'll get into what the future looks like.
So there are two aspects when you look at funding. One is the cost of funding, and the second is availability of funding. Let me cover these two aspects separately because this is a critical aspect. One is the cost of funding. And the cost of funding, what happens is all these infrastructure assets are 20-year or 25 or 30-year assets. So every port you make, or every airport you make, or every power plant you make will actually last for 25 to 30 years. So you need one, a person with that long-term mindset to give you a money at a reasonable rate so that your cost escalation or your economic viability doesn't get impaired. What happened in the last 10 years is, although the projects were conceived and the need was there, however, because of high interest rates, they became viable as your commissioning got delayed. So that is why, one, interest rates are very high. Second is that you're typically, of most of these assets, get funded 80 to 20. 80% is debt funded. Only 20 to 30% is equity funded. So on 70 to 80%, which is debt funded, interest rates play a very critical cost of building these infrastructure assets.
Sure.
The third part, which is the most important part, I think, than the interest rates in itself, is the funding availability. If you see our own history, earlier it used to be a central government prerogative of investing in infrastructure and cap goods. Then came the private sector, which we spoke about. Then now in the last 5 years, we've seen a lot of state governments taking the baton at the frontier to do investment from their own balance sheets, and central government has taken a bit of a backseat as a result. And now we are seeing in the recent last 3-4 years is these multilateral agencies, which are these global multilateral agencies who have a lot of money. They are coming to the front and actually sustaining and supporting India in its infrastructure and capex journey. Now what happens is, when these multilateral agencies come, they are dealing with wherever their money has gone. They are struggling to find return on capital on those monies, because as I told you, that globally the infrastructure is very good, but there's underutilized.
Correct.
The moment it is underutilized, you're not making enough money on that long-term asset. So there are agencies that are struggling to find return on capital. Today, when they look at India and they look at it as an opportunity where we are seeing the impetus from the government coming through, they feel more comfortable and they are opening up their wallets to us.
Okay.
And in the last 3-4 years, a lot of this funding availability is getting captured because of these multilateral agencies. And that is a very, very drastic and very, very impactful shift that we are seeing in the last 5 years.
Great. Now, let's get into the future. You know, I really wish the Mumbai Metro comes up really soon and all the traffic that we are getting stuck in gets resolved. What does the future look like for the infra and cap goods sector?
So as we discussed, so you need 3-4 things in place. What are the building blocks? The building blocks is, you need a government with a mission to make sure it happens. Is the need there? Answer is yes. Now it's all about getting it done. How do you get it done? You need a willingness, ability, and a capability.
Sure.
Today we have all the capability of executing the way we are executing. Ability comes from the cost of funding, the interest rates, which is already trending down in India. Over the last 7 years, we've seen that. And the funding availability. With these multilateral agencies, funding availability is also going up. The second vector of all this is the private sector capex. A private sector entrepreneur will only invest when he sees money on the table. Today, when you are talking about this NPL cycle being so deep and grave and so long lasting, that an entrepreneur is not in that risk-taking mindset. But that again will change very soon as we see coming out of the NPL cycle.
Sure.
The third is, on a private sector capex, you should look at this capacity utilization. So if I have already put up a factory and that factory is underutilized, there is no reason for me to put up another factory.
New plant, yeah.
So if you were to just look at this capacity utilization measure, we peaked at 83% capacity utilization in 2011.
Oh, that sounds high. Yeah.
Okay. That sounds very high.
Yeah.
And we troughed at 70%.
Wow.
In 2015.
In 4 years, we went from 83% to 70%.
So 83 to 70, and that's a very drastic shift.
Drop, yeah, of course.
And from there, we've started recovering, but the recovery has been very slow. We are just about recovered to 76% thereabouts from 2015 to 2019.
Yeah.
Now, this shift up has happened over a longer period, and that's why it's not looking so meaningful.
Yeah.
But from here on, any meaningful 1%, 2% delta in the capacity utilization will lead to a surge of private sector capex also.
Got it. Okay.
And the other way of thinking is, as we discussed the cyclicality in this sector, your GFCF to GDP actually at some point will go to 2x. And then you will see the capital expenditure growth, which the long-term growth rate will be at 15%. However, there will be a jump to 20 to 25% to make up for a mean reversion.
Sure.
So that is where the future will be. The future will be great, because the other part is the ideological part of it.
Okay.
Where the government is moving, if you really take a step back and see at a very high level, we are trying to connect India as one. We are trying to make all the states one. Earlier, what used to happen is your west used to be power surplus, but your east used to be power deficit.
Deficit, yeah.
The last 3-4 years, if you just look at it, what the government has really done is it's trying to connect all the commercial hubs of the whole of India. The north connecting with the south, east connecting with the west. So what it does is you are connecting and making a whole country as one. So today, if I am an entrepreneur investing in a power sector, in a power plant in the west, I don't have to worry about just the demand in the west. I can even capitalize on the demand deficit in the east or the south.
Yes.
Likewise, the dedicated freight corridor which the government has coined, where it's connecting all the major ports with strong railway lines only dedicated to freight. Now that is again connecting the commercial hub centers. The second is the Bharatmala, where the government wants to spend build 35,000 kilometers of high-speed roads, very good quality roads, so that the speed of the trucks increases between the main commercial centers.
Yeah.
And that itself will cost about 1.5 lakh crores.
Yeah.
Then you're talking about bullet train between Bombay and Ahmedabad. One bullet train will cost about 1 lakh crore.
Yeah.
And just imagine, we need much more than just a Mumbai-Ahmedabad bullet train.
Yeah.
You know, metros, we see metros, we are all reeling under congestion issues because of the metro work that is going on. Every year, 2 to 3 new cities are adopting metros as a main mode of transport incrementally. And each of these metros cost between 10 to 30,000 crores.
Wow.
So just imagine what happens. Just to give you a sense, say in India, in Bombay, we are seeing this, right? So an underground metro costs as much as 500 crores per kilometer. And if you go for an elevated one, then it's 200 to 250 crore per kilometer.
Wow.
So the spends are very chunky, very meaty, and they will actually better our life and generate employment and generate consumption and create that economic multiplier that we've always been waiting for the last 10 years.
Fantastic. The final part of the recording today, Shrey, how does one get into, or rather, how does one assess and size up a company, an infra or a cap goods company, because there are plenty, there are many of them out there, to invest in for the long term using the Motilal Oswal Asset Management Company's framework?
So, given that, you know, we've gone through a long consolidation phase, I think it's very simple today to take a bet for the next 10 years, because you are decisively at a cyclical bottom. So one is this the sector to be betting on? Answer is 100% yes. But you will have to come in with a longer time frame. Because of this long consolidation phase, the another good outcome has been that all the weak competition has already died out. So all the companies that have come out at the end of the tunnel are automatically have turned out to be much stronger and are stronger, and the competitive landscape has become easier for them.
Sure.
The second thing is you have to always have to remember this is a cyclical sector, because you are funding everything by debt. And that is what makes it very cyclical. And these are long gestation. When you are dealing with any long cycle gestation cyclical sector, you always have to keep an eye on the balance sheet. So bet on companies which have a very strong balance sheet and very strong ability to execute well. So only today, if I'm an entrepreneur and if I'm seeing demand coming in the next 2 years, I will give my factory building work to an executor I know who will execute in the next 2 years. I will go on the track record. I will not go on cheapest, who's the cheapest one to build the factory.
Sure.
The third part is that, you know, the capex texture is also changing. There is a lot of technology also that is coming up in this capex. Now, what happens is, like, so we are talking about bullet trains, which by default means that we have to invest in better signaling techniques, better signaling infrastructure. Otherwise, a normal train also keeps, we keep hearing about accidents and all happening.
Yeah, yeah.
The second is we are talking about smart cities. All these things means adoption of new technologies and who can adapt, bring global standards into India at a more economical rate will be a company that will win.
Sure.
And the last pivot is a company who has adopted efficiency as a frontier. If you have been doing the same work over the last 5 years, the only company who will sustain into the next 10 years is who have up its own bar of execution, lowered the cost, reduced the time to do the same work. So just to give you an idea, like, you know, if you've been building residential buildings for the last 5 years, you will be building the same residential building at 20% lesser time today than what you did in the last 5 years.
Correct.
You know, today we are building roads. Every day we build about, we used to build 4 to 5 kilometers per day of roads. Today we are doing almost 9 to 10 kilometers per day. So the speed of building roads has also doubled.
Wow.
Now that has only been able because we are using far and far more modernized equipments.
Technology.
And you can see it around you, right? When our roads used to be built, we used to see only those road rollers used to come and you know, people many manually used to fill the tar on the road.
Yeah.
Today there are a lot of big machines that are doing the job.
Yeah.
So they do a far better job and far faster a job.
Okay. And that's a wrap on this episode of the Equity Sahi Hai podcast brought to you by Motilal Oswal Asset Management Company. I'm your host Anupam Gupta, B50 on Twitter. My guest was Shrey Lunkar, Senior VP, Motilal Oswal Asset Management Company. Thank you so much for joining us. And if you enjoyed listening to the podcast, do check out other podcasts on the IVM Podcast Network.
Hi, I'm Ronnie Screwalam, and you've been listening to my podcast and the multiple chapters of my book, Dream With Your Eyes Open. And I think to that, I've had good chats here. And I think chapter 13 in my book is all about Q&As, and I'm sure there are more Q&As. Happy to answer them. So send them in, and happy to have a dialogue with you on that.
So if you'd like to ask Ronnie a question, send it to us at dreaming@ivmpodcast.com. If selected, we'll read out your question on the last episode and have Ronnie answer it. You can also send a question to us on social media at IVM Podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Hi, I'm Satyajit.
Hi, I'm Racheta.
We are from the Open Library Project and we host a podcast called Paperback.
Paperback is a podcast where we engage with stalwarts and experts from various industries, suggesting non-fiction titles that contributed to their journey in a big way.
We've had guests like Anjali Raina, Dr. Marcus Rani, Dr. Swati Lodha, Ambi Parmeswaran, Apurva Damani, and many more on our show Paperback. Find new episodes every Wednesday on IVM Podcast app, website, or wherever you listen to podcasts.